The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football and movie fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on Stitcher, iTunes, and NFL.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K, Sheck, Sheck, Sheck.
We have some football, we have some sports, and otherwise to discuss, but I mentioned movies at the top because I am very excited for today's program. I think you'll enjoy it as well if you've been following, or even if you haven't been. You know how everybody does their silly little brackets around March Madness. Well, here on the DDFP, Black Tie, the producer behind the glass, is a self-proclaimed cinephile who has not seen very many classic movies. So he put together a sweet 16 of the all-time greatest movies he's never seen. They included Forrest Gump, Top Gun, Goodfellas, some other gems out there. Well, now it's been boiled down to the Final Four. He devoted Final Four weekend to going through these four gems: Godfather, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Pulp Fiction. He has watched them all. He's going to deliver his results. You, the listener, voted on this to boil it down to the Final Four. Black Tie will take it over from here. He has watched the movies. He is going to provide us all with his reviews. I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited about sitting here in Studio 66. Maximum strength! Because if you've ever seen any video that comes out of here, and if you haven't, just go to NFL.com and Google DDFP or Dameshek or whatever, and surely some videos will come up. We've had some gay times in here in 2015 already, but we are looking at a random pro football game. It's the Giants with Phil Simms at QB playing against the Dallas Cowboys. I'm guessing it's roundabout, because there's Charles Haley. I'm guessing it's roundabout 92, 93, probably the Cowboys on their way to another Super Bowl. I guess if we see Jimmy Johnson, we'll really know. I didn't know that even Phil Simms overlapped with the Cowboys dynasty. Either way, the point is, it's great fun here at NFL Media, because sometimes on the TV, you'll just find random games playing here. And this is, like I say, one from 20-some-odd years ago between NFC East foes. And that reminds me of the bracket that NFL.com just completed, which is the greatest game of all time bracket. 64 of the greatest pro football games ever were on the ledger, and here to talk about how that one worked out, among some other things. He's our resident Miami Dolphins fan all the way from London, England. It's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. His name is Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank, he's Handsome Hank, he's Handsome Hank.
Wow, an auspicious occasion. We get the full theme song for Handsome Hank. Hello, Handsome. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for playing the full version, Black Tie. That was exciting.
That was. And now I forget already. I know we've talked about it, but I can't recall. Have you seen any James Bond movies, Black Tie?
First of all, yes. It's a special
You've seen Daniel
episode.
Craig.
He's seen Daniel
I've seen
Craig.
I've seen everyone since Pierce
Brosnan. Yep.
And I've seen one of Roger Moore's.
Looking back on the Pierce Brosnan era, it's clear now that he was the worst Bond.
No. Timothy Dalton was.
Well, yeah, but it almost doesn't even count.
Yeah, the Pierce Brosnan one is sort of has a tragic quality to it, because he wanted to be James Bond,
right,
and was really destined, cut
right,
the perfect figure to play James Bond. When he made the scene in America, though, I remember loving the TV show he was on NBC with Stephanie Zimbalist. Remington Steele. Did you get Remington Steele in England?
I knew about it, and I think it may have been on in England, but it wasn't a big deal.
It was cute. It was a crime solving with some mirth sprinkled in.
Yep.
It was really the precursor to Moonlighting,
right,
with Bruce Willis and what's her name, Cybill Shepherd. And it was a great show. It was fun, and you could see him playing James mm-hmm. Bond. He wanted to do it, but the producers or NBC or whoever said, you're not allowed, we're not going to release you
right,
to go and make the James Bond movies. That's how Timothy Dalton came to be. And then we got a little long in the tooth, Pierce Brosnan playing mm-hmm. this role.
Yeah, I think the problem was he tried to play it half as Roger Moore and half as Sean Connery, which I guess he thought that was the sweet spot, and it didn't really work out.
Well, Roger Moore was a pretty good Bond. He's the one when I was introduced right. to the pictures. The first one I saw was The Spy Who Loved Me, which I'll still throw in there. I'll stack that one up there in the top four or five James Bond pictures because of Jaws, the bad guy
right.
who would bite people.
Yes.
Weird choice by the producers to have Jaws in at a time when Jaws the Shark was
dominating
cinema.
As well. Well, you know, if it works, why not? It would have been harder for the shark to play the bad guy.
Well, what's weird, in The Spy Who Loves Me, Jaws
bites a shark.
Yeah. Kills a shark by biting him.
Yeah. That'll teach that, you know, if the shark's gonna give it some of its own medicine, I guess, is the answer.
That's like that thing of I mean, that must have been a little wink from the producer.
Yeah,
that couldn't have been an accident, right?
Of course.
Well, that's what, you know, Dickens writes about. I remember being in middle school and reading Oliver Twist. And Dickens writes about a character called one of the characters in Fagin's little troupe of rapscallions is Master Bates is the guy's name. And I remember saying to the teacher, Mr. Thomas, that's not an accident, right? And he denied it. In fact, he was an Englishman, this Mr. Thomas. What was he up to? Trying to deceive my American brain, trying to outsmart me. You wouldn't understand what Dickens was going for. I don't know, but I mean, obviously it is in hindsight, right?
Yes.
How was your Easter, Handsome Hank?
It was good. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. You know what my favorite thing about Easter was?
What's that?
Black Tie live tweeting, watching the four movies.
I loved it myself.
That was, I mean, that to me was the highlight of Easter weekend. It's almost the best event that's ever happened on social media.
Kentucky, Wisconsin was juicy in a lot of ways, but
nothing
paled in
like
comparison
that,
to Black
which
Tie.
Which is why I'm so excited about this podcast.
Yes. Do they have Easter in England?
Yeah, they do.
They do?
They do, yes.
All right, cool.
People, I've been asked that by a bewildering number of people this weekend. I really have. So do you do, and does your Easter involve chocolate eggs? Yes, it involves.
Well, actually, I was making a joke, but it has the bunny and all that stuff?
The whole lot.
I really did. That occurred to me at some point as I was traveling through the weekend, and I failed to look it up. Is there, what is the root of that, the bunny?
I have no idea, but because bunnies don't lay eggs. I mean, the whole thing is, it's all so mixed up. There's obviously a religious part to Easter, but then there's chocolate eggs, but then there's a rabbit for some reason. Why on earth would a rabbit, I mean, it would make much more sense, and frankly, it would, you know, the rabbit then has to go get these eggs from presumably birds or animals that lay eggs. Wouldn't it be easier for there to be an Easter chicken or an Easter bird of some type that just delivers the eggs?
Yeah.
The whole thing is, it's messed up.
And why, but what is the tie-in of chocolate to, I mean, I'm not a Christian, so I wouldn't know, but what, it seems like it's a little glib.
The chocolate part has no connection whatsoever to the Christian part. I don't believe there's anywhere in the Bible or anywhere else where it says, and now thou shalt eat chocolate.
Yeah, it seems like pretty, again, you know, I'm on the outside looking in, but it seems like the event that is being acknowledged around Easter is pretty grim stuff.
Right.
You know, I don't know why we need the infusion of because maybe it's grim. We need to lighten it up.
Well,
a little.
I think the celebration is around after the grim stuff.
After the stuff, right?
Right. But still, I mean, it's confused, and frankly, it's inefficient. If there's a rabbit delivering eggs, I'm not sure. Cut out the middleman here.
Magic rabbit, because it seems like he's giant.
If there's
too.
A magic rabbit, there's bound to be a magic chicken somewhere too.
We're always talking about the fact that he makes chocolate eggs, this rabbit, but we're sleeping on the fact that he's like 100 times the size of a normal rabbit. Although, you know what?
Let's
enough
not get
about
too into
this.
It, because I don't think either of us have the answer.
No, indeed.
Going down the rabbit hole, guys.
Look who's on his game. Look who watched some good movies, maybe gleaned a little something from it, and is now going to be a better black tie going forward.
Yep.
I love it.
Looking forward to it. I bet you back there he's got some drops from each of the movies, his favorite lines from each of the movies.
Oh, I can't wait to get to it, and yet I want to try and delay things for just a second with a couple of things. First of all, let's talk about the greatest game ever bracket that just completed on NFL.com, and it was paid off on NFL Network by showing it. The final was, I know the answer, but Handsome, tell us what your final four was.
I can tell you this, the final. I'll have to think about what the final four was. The final was Super Bowl 43, your beloved Pittsburgh Steelers beating the Cardinals in a thriller in Tampa, that was, right?
Yes.
And then
with the most incongruous hats after the Super Bowl, the Steelers complete, they get their sixth title, and then they're all wearing green and blue hats that look like something from the Seattle Seahawks circa 1983. It was very weird.
Right. Well, then, so then that game was up against in the final Super Bowl 49, which you'll recall as the game we watched most recently in the NFL.
Yes.
In order to get there, neither of those games was a number one seed in the bracket that we created.
Huh.
So the final four pitted Super Bowl, the Super Bowl 49, the most recent one, against Super Bowl 13, Cowboys Steelers, another Steelers one. And then somehow, and it's not clear how it got through because it was a six seed, the Super Bowl 43 was a four seed. Super Bowl 43 beat the 2011 NFC Divisional Playoff game, which was Saints 49ers. You remember that great game?
That is a dynamite game.
It was a
game.
Great game. I mean, everything that was on here was pretty worthy of being in there. But so what we wound up with was a third seed in Super Bowl 49, which was in something called the Crazy Endings bracket, against a fourth seed, which was Super Bowl 43, which was in the Great From the Get-Go bracket.
Great From the Get-Go.
No one seed made it through the whole way through. The Catch was a one seed. The Great Chargers Dolphins 81 division.
That's my favorite.
And I agree with you. Even though the Dolphins lost, I thought it was a great game.
Dan Fouts versus originally David Woodley, and then they put Don Strock in, who makes a mighty comeback. This is in the height of the Air Coryell days, down in the Orange Bowl. It goes into overtime. It's just
field goals. There's everything.
It's
glorious. Then the Crazy Endings bracket, the number one seed was Giants Bills, which actually lost in the first round to Deshaun Jackson's punt return.
That's a top five Super Bowl. I do put Super Bowl 25, Scott Norwood's miss, in the top five.
And especially why it has to stay in there? Because it ended that run of terrible Super Bowls. So it suddenly, it was like, okay, Super Bowls are kind of worthy again.
That's interesting. I that didn't register for me. Yeah, that's not just, if you've never seen that game, look that one up, because it's not just Norwood missing the kick. It's sort of like, I worry Super Bowl 49 is going to go down that way for Pete Carroll and Daryl Bevel's decision to not run there, and it will obscure the rest of the game,
right,
which is dandy. And that's a great one. Pretty much top to bottom.
And then the final first seed, let's just cover all those in the Great From the Get-Go bracket, was the greatest game of all time. Well, that's, which is what it's called, the 1958 NFL Championship, which actually isn't, because it lost in the first round to an eighth seed.
The 81 Cowboys Niners in the stick, Dwight Clark, an all-time game.
And that was a number one seed as well.
And I'm starting to revise. I'm not surprised that the Super Bowl 49 won. People will always, when you open this up to the public, people always go with what happened most recently. You could have. I should have called that one before it began, so I would look smart. That is the way I'm revising it now. 49 was great, but I think that the number one Super Bowl of all time is Super Bowl 13. The more I think about it, because of the star power on the field, more Hall of Famers gathered for that 60 minutes than in any other game in pro football history. So remarkable alone. But then the shootout in the first half is dynamite. Then the Steelers pull away a little bit in the second half, but the Cowboys make a game of it. I think that top to bottom is probably the best one. Either way, well done, Handsome Hank. A fun tournament to follow
and
watch.
The most fun thing about it actually was we worked hand in hand with NFL Network, and so a lot of these games, if you've been watching NFL Network over the last month or so, have shown up there. And, you know, Super Bowl 13, another one I'd always been told was a great game, and I've definitely watched highlights of it in the past, but to be able to sit down and just have on the TV those games in full, it was fun to be able to watch some of these
games. Isn't that the greatest? I'll tell you, we've been doing, and in fact, in the coming days, you can look on NFL.com. I'm not sure where else, if it'll be on YouTube, maybe. I'm not sure, the NFL's YouTube channel now. But Terrell Davis and I sat down for the latest edition of the NFL's Infinite DVR. We have the original broadcasts of all the games, And so he and I sat down and watched Super Bowl 32. Of course, the This One's for John game, right, and the helicopter, and TD had migraines during the game, and the Packers are trying to repeat, and that's that team, Brett Favre at his height and all that sort of stuff. So we sat down and looked at that. Where I came up with the idea originally to go back and start looking at these games and reviewing them was watching Super Bowl 13 on the internet randomly. I found it about 5, 6, 8 years ago. And there's a play early in Super Bowl 13. Roger Staubach, Heisman Trophy winner, Hall of Famer, all-time great QB, hands the ball off to another Heisman Trophy winner and all-time great at his position, Tony Dorsett, hands it off to him. He tries to go around the end. Mean Joe Green and Jack Lambert meet him as Tony Dorsett slips. His feet go out from under him for a yard and a half gain, and the two Hall of Famers touch him down. It's the most innocuous play, except it's in the Super Bowl, and it involves four Hall of Famers. I love it. Yeah. So, yeah, to be able to look back and see, because that is part of looking at the original broadcast, it's so much fun. We're now in a place, if you see Walter Payton highlights, you don't ever see him do anything other than run for a touchdown, right, or bowl over three guys or whatever. It's neat to see
a three-yard run
yeah,
by Walter Payton.
Yeah, it helps.
Yeah, it is.
It does help measure. When you talk about Shady McCoy, what's his place in history, it's fair to Shady and everybody who we're looking at currently to be able to say, like, yeah, you know, the guys you're measuring them against didn't run for 72 yards every time they touched
it. Right, exactly. Right now we're watching in this game that Dave mentioned at the top, a guy who I always enjoyed watching, Rodney Hampton, very hard-nosed, like north-south runner.
Yeah.
And it's fun, you know, there it is, 3.5 yards.
I think that Rodney Hampton, I could be wrong about this, but I'm almost certain, in the storied New York Football Giants franchise, when Rodney Hampton retired, I believe he was the number one rusher. Isn't that weird? The greatest rusher in the Giants history was Rodney Hampton. I think he's now been trumped by Tiki Barber. I don't know that Giants fans would prefer Tiki have that crown.
Yeah, who knows?
All right, now, before we get to the movies, one more thing, Handsome. I did mention there was some basketball going on this weekend, college style, and I wanted to get real quick your thoughts on this. First of all, Black Tie Behind the Glass, did you watch this game?
I watched a good half of it. I had to go play hoops myself, actually.
Oh,
so
young Kobe doing what he's got to do,
get some buckets.
We lost by a big margin, but let the team in scoring, so
it's all about you,
Handsome. You didn't take it in.
You know what, last night I did. I tuned in for the final 48 seconds of that. Was the, I watched you know, in game time, 48 seconds of the, I thought it was a great tournament. Really.
Do you feel, it's interesting then, because as somebody who doesn't watch college basketball regularly, do you sense, does something permeate through the screen that makes Duke unlikable to you? Or do you have any of that sense that most people have?
I know the stories, I know why, but I didn't get that sense in the 48 seconds of game time that I watched.
Well, the officiating was crummy. Wisconsin, I would love to see Okafor steps on the baseline. They don't call that. The ball goes out on, Justice Winslow goes out. They don't get that right. And this is just in the last 2.5 minutes of the game. Interesting to see how that might have played out otherwise. But Bo Ryan, after the game, rightly bellyached sincerely about the officiating. And, of course, people on Mount Pius are calling him classless and all that kind of stuff. This is, you know what, Coach Ryan, I'm switching over, you know. It's time for you to read your scripted apology. In 21st century America, that's what we demand. If you say something sincerely and it's off color, then you're required the next day to read a scripted apology. We're trying to have a self-righteous society, Coach Ryan. Please, play ball. Who is, though, Bo Ryan? I find him likable for doing that. Real quick, before we get to the movies, who's the greatest Bo of all time?
Bo Jackson.
I mean, it's not, Bo Jackson, not close. No question.
And Bo from Bo Duke.
Bo Duke, and we lost, and you know, we lost Roscoe P. Coltrane.
I heard, yeah.
Did you have Dukes of Hazzard in England?
Oh, yeah.
That had to be...
That's great. Do you know, shall I tell you a true story? My 5th birthday, the cake, I made my mom make the General Lee.
That is
bright
crazy!
Orange. Yep.
So you're a Brit with the, what do they call it? I can't believe I can't think of what... What's the rebel flag called? You have the rebel flag... you're an English kid.
Yep.
In a way,
I would.
You're really
tied to
it.
There was a period of time. There's a. This is a true story. There's a period of time where I'd only get out the car window. I would say to my mom, I'm not getting out the door. Just wind the window down. I can get out that way.
Wow. That's pretty good. I love that. That has to be, you know, it is funny when you go to Europe, even to this day. It's a little bit, actually, that's not true. I haven't been there in 5 years. But, you know, there was a time, and it was pretty recent, that even in, you know, the 21st century Europe, the assumption about what Americans are seems to remain.
Right.
We're either cowboys or surfers.
Yeah.
And that's
it's because of the TV program.
If those are the shows you were getting, then yeah, I guess I'm not surprised to hear that. So yeah, Bo Duke has left us. Roscoe P. Coltrane has left us. Bo Duke, Bo Derek.
Yes.
Bo Bridges.
Yep.
What was that called? The Fabulous Baker Boys. That's a high watermark for him. He's terrific.
Bo and Arrow.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. Riddick Bowe.
Yep.
The great pugilist.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Derek. Did I say her? Yeah, yes, I did say Bo. She's the best girl, Bo, I think. But I think you're right. Let's go Bo Jackson, and then Bo Ryan slots in under Bo Derek, but ahead of Bo Bridges.
What about Bo Duke? He's in there as well.
Yeah, Bo Duke. Yeah. All right, in honor of you.
Thank you.
You actually have, in a weird way, I guess you, wait, Bo and Luke. Bo was the blonde guy?
Yeah, I don't remember. I think Bo's the
Luke,
blonde guy.
Sorry, I think you bear a vague resemblance to Luke.
Do I?
A little bit,
that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
I'd like, if we would doll you up like a, you know, a redneck guy.
In an all denim outfit. And
last thing here is, we got a tweet. I want to do more tweets, Black Tie, on a regular basis. The last show we did was all tweet-based questions. I got one from John Willett. He says, the best two actors to play the same character in movie history, De Niro and Brando played Vito Corleone.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholson and Heath Ledger played the Joker. You're also leaving out Luke Skywalker. Mark Hamill has voiced the Joker. That's a keen question.
Batman's had a few good actors come through the doors there.
I think we just named the other one, James Bond.
Yep.
We've seen, I think James Bond beats, although I don't know that De Niro and Brando can be beaten. Yeah, you had Brando and Russell Crowe play Superman's father.
How about Hannibal Smith? Played by George Peppard and then by Bradley Cooper. Probably a little lower down on the list.
I don't even think you're right about that.
What?
Peppard played the main guy, Hannibal.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Bradley Cooper wasn't that.
Who was
Bradley?
Neeson.
Neeson was the main guy.
The A-team guy in my day. The TV show, not the movie.
By the way, as we're watching this game, this random game from the early 90s, it's fun to also see the score scroll by and see who was bad.
Good news for you. The Steelers are up.
Yeah, they're 8-7.
They're up 13-9 on the 7-8
Cleveland Browns. And I was happy for you to see your Miami Dolphins.
Have they gone ahead?
Oh, no. I thought they were well ahead of the 4-11.
They were well ahead, but the score, they were behind in the game. This is interesting. I tell you, they just popped up when this game was. It's week 18 of the 1994 season. Remember, they had two bye weeks that one year. And so this is week 18, and I think if I'm right, we keep seeing Lawrence Taylor. I think this may be Lawrence Taylor's final NFL game.
Yeah. Well, and we see there's Jimmy Johnson. So, so they I guess this would be probably 90.
It's January 94.
Oh, it's that deep into the 90s that Jimmy Johnson was still there. I don't remember that. All right. So let's get to it, Black Tie. Black Tie's anxious to get to the big event here.
Himself.
His final
he's,
four.
He's interested
completely
in getting to himself,
buried the but lead on this show, guys. Completely. We're like 20 minutes in, and, you know.
That's called.
We've got people. They've listened.
That's
they've
called building anticipation.
Right. They've had a great time up until now, and now you have to. Frankly, you're the cherry on top. This better be good.
Yeah, if you go and see, I'm trying to think of a band that Black Tie would be excited to go and see. Boys to Men.
Boys to Men.
Yeah, Black Tie went to see Boys to Men. They don't just Boys to Men. It's not like, hey, showtime is 7:30 p.m. Boys to Men isn't on the stage at 7:31. No, they give you some hokum. Oh, here's whatever, so some up-and-comers. They show you this. Then they get to the cherry on top, you see.
Right, and even then, Boys to Men show up late. just to keep you going. You might go and get another drink at the bar. That's what we just did.
It's
We opened for you, Black Tie.
All right, let's get to it, Black Tie. It's time for the payoff here. The greatest movies of all time. Black Tie hasn't seen Bracket Final Four. Big payoff. Go.
All right. First matchup, Star Wars are going up against Pulp Fiction. What movie do you want to start with?
I'll leave it to Hanson.
Well, so just a little scene setter. On Friday before Black Tie went to watch this, Dave and I sat with some colleagues, and we tried to work out a ranking of how, in our opinions at least, Black Tie would perceive these movies and therefore like how he would rank them, 1 through 4. I thought that the winning movie was going to be Pulp Fiction. I thought that would be his favorite. So I'd like to start with Pulp Fiction. You thought that his number one movie was going to be The Godfather, I believe.
My order went Godfather 1, right. Pulp Fiction 2, Raiders 3, Star Wars 4. I thought Star Wars was the one, even though going in he was biased against Raiders of the Lost Ark for still unexplained reasons or satisfying reasons. I thought Star Wars is the one that he would think was hokey because the special effects would be outdated.
So I had Raiders at 4, I had Pulp Fiction at 1, and I think I had Star Wars 2 and Godfather 3.
All right, let's start with Pulp Fiction then, Black.
All right, let's do it with Pulp Fiction. I'm not going to play it. I'm just starting off. But, all right, so...
play it underneath. I like to hear it. It's
everyone
fun.
Else
puts
has
me
heard
in the mood.
Well, that's what's funny, actually. Watching these movies, so much already seen and heard from these movies. It's like, oh, I've seen this. I know what's going on here.
Yeah, that's your fault.
But, Pulp Fiction, I thought it was...
For Black Tie to be angry at the world for not giving spoiler.
No, shoot. I mean, there were some guys, though, as I was tweeting about the movies, that would just spoil it for me. I was like, oh, wait, just wait until such and such happens. I'm like, dude. You know, chill.
I was trying to be helpful with my tweet replies to you without giving anything away.
Yeah, some
please, I want the music back, though.
Oh, you want the music back?
Yeah, I'm going to play it the whole way through.
Well,
yeah, I like it.
I mean,
yeah,
we don't have rights to that, guys. We can't just play it.
What do you think? Anybody, what do you think?
Play it again.
I play
it,
start.
You think Miramax is listening to us right now?
Could be. You never know. I mean, I always love this song. I just, actually
did not know
where it
came from.
Pulp Fiction.
Dick Dale. No, it's a song from, I believe, the late 60s.
Ah, fair enough. All right, so really good movie, I thought. First scene, Tim Roth is in it. I'm a big Tim Roth guy. Mm-hmm. Big fan of his work and his accent. So I was like, oh, this is fun. I'm in. It's told in, it's a non-linear story, which is very Christopher Nolan-like, which is, again, another one of my guys that I'm a big fan of.
A fun device.
Yeah.
Useful, in fact.
Yeah, it's funny because Tarantino does that a lot. Nolan does it a lot, too. It's like, well, if you're a director who's not necessarily on their level, shouldn't you maybe start thinking about telling stories in that order, too?
Well, it's the ensuing half decade, everybody was accused. The problem with doing that is that then you're accused of being a copycat. You don't want to be second to the party with doing something like that.
Fair enough. All right, so another thing that really stood out to me, I got really hungry at the start. A lot of talk about burgers and milkshakes, Royal with
Hawaiian
cheese.
Burger.
Royal with cheese.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I should have. I went to get some food before this, and I got, like, something healthy, some turkey and some pasta. And I was like, I could have done used some burgers here. So that was fun. Really, the thing that really stood out to me, the scene that really stood out to me was the Say What Again scene. Again, I've heard and seen this a bunch of times. The one thing I did not know. You know, I'm going to go ahead and play it real quick.
Describe what Marcellus Wallace looks like.
What?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you.
See, what's surprising about that is that he actually does say what again eventually, and obviously pays for it. And I was like, whoa, I didn't know that. So that was a little interesting.
Wait a second. You were surprised that when the character says what again, Marcellus Wiley does him in?
Well, I was surprised that he actually did say what again after Samuel L. went off.
He'd been told not to say what again.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
What Black Tie, the surprise was that he did say what again, but he also was peeing his pants at the time.
Yeah, right. So that's like, the point.
I know. I totally agree. I just never knew that that's how that scene carried on.
You know how you don't know this, Black Tie, but Coen Brother movies often involve, in almost every one of their movies, revolves around two-bit guys who get in over their head. They think they can pull off some sort of a caper,
a bigger
crime or whatever, and then they find themselves out of their depth, and then they pay for it. That's sort of what those characters in the apartment are about. And Tarantino is delivering to people that are legitimate that put them in their place very quickly. Oh, you think you can pull a caper on us? It's basically inverting the Coen brothers. We're always rooting for these schnooks, and instead Quentin Tarantino dispatches them quickly. We don't care about the two-bit losers. We're talking about the legitimate criminals here.
No, that was great. Another thing I learned a lot about was foot massages at the top. I was like, oh, a lot of foot massaging talk. But, I mean, ultimately, I mean, we can talk about this. Good movie, really fun. It just really it surprised me, actually, because it was long, but it didn't feel long. It was really well cast. One of the things I did watching these movies was always thinking about, hey, if this movie was made today, who would play this role? And this was the one movie I was like, no, everyone that was cast in that role was perfectly cast for that role. I mean, because a lot of bit parts come in here, you leave in, you know, 2 minutes. So that was really good. And Samuel L. Jackson, man, like, I guess this is what Samuel L. Jackson has been playing a parody of ever since.
Yeah,
of course.
That's right.
That's why if you've ever watched him in any other movie, you have this to refer to. It's and go, like, okay, they know that he can do this. That's why they got him to do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, every other role he's been playing, it's like, hey, remember what he did in Pulp Fiction? Do that. Just a little bit more of the top and, you know, don't actually have any other good scenes. Because he was Samuel L. in a lot of scenes, but he was also like at the diner. It was great.
It's a star-making role, of course. Yeah, Travolta. This was his big resurgence.
I'm back, right?
He had been basically a zero for a decade, I think. You know, and that this was his reemergence. What did you think of the Bruce Willis storyline?
Oh, that was interesting. I saw
the gimp.
That was such a weird scene. That was so weird. Oh, by the way, let's take it back. Last week I kept saying, I don't like Tarantino movies. Oh, not that I don't like them. I tend not to watch them because it has shock and violence. You know, it's really just violence that comes out of nowhere. And it's like, whoa, where did that come from? First 15 minutes, actually 18-minute mark, that happens. And then you guys always just make fun of me. It's like, how do you know you've never seen these movies? Well,
there's a difference between the ultra-violence of Kill Bill where the blood sprays all over.
It's not about ultra-violence. It's about the shocking violence. Yeah, it's like, whoa, where did that come from?
But you needed it for context.
That device is used in movies all over the place. Yeah. That's what shock is, you know. So one way or another, someone's going to scare you, frighten you, surprise you. That's a movie device across every genre, including comedy, for God's sake.
And like I just said, yes, you're watching this trying to suss out what's legit. They make it quite clear that these schnooks are out of their depth when Sam Jackson starts pulling triggers on them.
Fair enough. And
now you know that these are legitimately. At that point, you're listening to them talk about foot massages and everything else. And a moment later, and they're talking about TV pilots, and the next minute they're shooting kids. You know, now you know who's
these are a couple bad men.
Yeah, really bad men. Speaking of Bruce Willis, obviously the Christopher Walken scene.
That's my favorite.
No. Little man, I gave the watch to you.
See, obviously, I couldn't use the whole thing there. I mean,
couldn't use very much.
I know, not at all. But that was another one of those scenes again. He comes in for like a scene and leaves, but that starts off Bruce Willis' storyline, and which is goes to places that I didn't expect it to go. But, you know, it was fun.
It's fun. That's it. You know what? That's the best way I think you can describe Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it is. But
it's a joyous ride.
Right. It's one of those, probably everyone has, I don't know, 5 to 10 movies where if you're flicking through the channels, you see Pulp Fiction's on, there's nothing else you really want to do, you're watching TV, you'll go to it anyway because you know whatever moment you go in, it's fun. And also, it seems to be one of those ones that I have kind of amnesia about and have forgotten that things happen in there. And then you're like, oh, yeah, there's this bit. I love this bit. I'd forgotten it happens.
But it is a bunch of just random things, like taking things
off. That's why it's easy to drop into and come out of, because it's kind of sketches within, you know, it's like 15 great.
Well, it's paradoxical in that way. It feels random, but of course, you get to know John Travolta, you're invested in him, and in the Bruce Willis storyline, he's just, you know, Travolta's dispatched as an afterthought, and that's what Tarantino does really well in most of his pictures. If you watch them, even if someone is about to get killed, he spends a scene on that person so you know them,
Right. And then you feel the loss of them being taken away. He does that pretty consistently. What did you think of who's your favorite character? Sam Jackson, I gather.
Sam Jackson, because they're just so surprising. I'm a big Avengers guy, obviously, and I see him in all these roles he plays now, and it's so surprising to see him when he was at the, you know, might of all his powers, where he could do the crazy stuff, but also still like just own a scene. He was, you know, so he was
great. I always like the.
I love the Wolf, though.
I was just gonna say the Wolf. The Wolf is great. What's great with him is when we first find him, he's at a party in a tuxedo, and it's 7:30 or 8 in the morning, and he's sitting on the edge of a bed in a hotel room, and you can see the party going on behind him. That's just the greatest.
No, he was great. He came in there and just handled business. Another odd thing to me, well, not odd, interesting, was that the first time you see Bruce Willis, it's almost like the, which we'll get to, the Godfather scene, where it's like it's just on Bruce Willis the whole time, except that the voice off camera is Ving Rhames, and you're literally just on Bruce Willis for like the first 2 minutes. And it's like, who's talking to him? Well, obviously, you know who's talking to him. But that is like a slow pull out. I wonder if Tarantino was actually thinking about that, like when he shot that scene. I don't know.
Well, Tarantino concedes that a lot of, you know, most of his ideas are, I think he would probably describe them as homages to past pictures. But I don't hold that against him.
Total
same
homage.
As sampling in hip hop, you know.
Huge homage to Michael Bay, definitely. It was a 360 spinning shot that, you know, it's Michael Bay. Come on. Yeah. That's the same.
Michael Bay is
thinking
one of his
Transformers at
yeah,
the time.
Exactly.
All right, so overall you give it obviously a thumbs up.
Definitely a thumbs up.
How many black ties out of 5?
I give it 4 out of 5 black ties.
4 out of 5 black
ties. I was trying to think of what is that.
I think it's some black ties.
Black ties. Yeah. All right, yeah. All right, good.
Should be like a nice little tie.
Okay. Yeah. Right, yeah. 4 out of 5 black ties for Pulp Fiction. Good. So we're off to a good start. You liked it.
Okay, you choose one now, Dave, for his review.
Well, no, he's pitting them against.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry.
All right,
they're
so
up against
next,
each
we
other.
Got Star Wars.
Now, listen to that.
I'm in already.
You're in? Well.
That's the best.
Shaq is so. That's one of the best things that stood out this weekend. Shaq was so excited for this. He was so over the moon about this. Great score there. Fun score. Obviously, again, another score that I already knew of.
Yeah.
That was what they'd
been
waiting for.
Very first
thing.
Like,
everyone else has said they like our score, but not Black Tie yet.
No, they're approved. very first
John
thing
Williams will be so pleased.
He will be. Very first thing off the bat was on the spaceship, the sentries running. And it was just kind of like, to this day, movies have not gotten running right, especially when it's like a bunch of characters as opposed to just one. And there's a bunch of sentries just running on the ship with R2-D2 and CP3O. It's like, wait, they don't look right. That's weird. Why would
their outfits, the rebel forces, yeah, their outfits are lame. I'll give you that. But don't forget. When Vader, we hear him. You hear his breathing before you see him, and you hear the dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
It is the greatest introduction to a bad guy in movies.
I was keeping on for that, and I'm sorry, I disagree there. It was cool.
Vader's emergence onto the ship when the Imperial ship overtakes the Rebel one, and then we hear the clanking around, and then finally the door blows, and a couple of stormtroopers fight their way through, and once everything's settled down, then Vader emerges. That's not the greatest reveal ever.
No, I would still take Star Trek Into Darkness. Cumberbatch's character.
Cumberbatch.
That was better.
Cumberbatch does not beat Vader. Shame on you.
I mean,
all right, continue.
Cumberbatch is Khan. I mean, spoiler alert, but that was pretty big.
Cumberbatch and Ricardo Montalban played Khan. That's another one.
That's a good one. That's a great one. So, but Darth Vader, his outfit, great. Till today, awesome. It's third on my list of all-black caped costumes behind Zorro, who's number one. Mm-hmm. Dark Knight. Batman Dark Knight, which obviously Batman was influenced and inspired by Zorro. And then number three is, Darth Vader. So
Vader's the best. But all right.
Vader would choke you out for that without even looking at you. He'd be like, well, I'm third behind Zorro.
I mean, he's not just a physically imposing man who can dispatch you neatly with his with his lightsaber. He doesn't even need
doesn't
it.
Even need it.
If you're not a Jedi, he puts you away with him without lifting a finger, literally.
Well, he may lift one.
He might do the little pinching motion. I find your lack of faith in the Force disturbing.
Another stunning fact over the weekend was that he was actually a Jedi Knight. Never knew that. Never knew he had a...
Well, that's because you'd never watched the movie.
Yeah, they didn't know.
not the kind of fact that's just going to fall into your lap.
But I mean, you figure
not in a dictionary or an encyclopedia. It wasn't taught to you at school.
You figure you know about a storyline, about why, you know, kind of like with Lucifer. You know, you know things about people like, oh, this villain has this backstory. He used to be this, and now he's this. I never heard that about Vader before.
All these movies that you're watching come for you after, you know, 15 years after they came out, 30 years or whatever since they came out, come with the added weight of you knowing things about them and having assumptions about them and having heard to see, probably having seen some scenes. So if Star Wars, I would think, is the number one in that out of this quartet that fits that description, if you liked it at all and didn't and could find new things to enjoy about it, that's exciting.
No, it was good. It was fun in that regard. You could see why, I mean, so heralded, like, it's almost like set, you know, set the template for all the stuff that I like now, in a sense.
Did you find C-3PO and R2 delightful?
Not so much. They were cool. I mean, R2,
well, they're not cool. I mean, R2 is kind of cool, but C-3PO.
R2's cool. C-3PO is the opposite of cool.
He was looking like an oddball. But speaking of relationships.
He reminds, you know, R-C-3PO is Handsome Hank.
But how? What?
Whoa.
How dare you?
Because he has the accent.
You know, I've met the guy who plays. He used to drink in
Anthony
in a
Daniels.
Pub. He used to drink in a pub where
is
I would
that
drink.
Right?
I've met him several times. Anthony Daniels.
Whoa.
He loves it. You know, he loves a pint of beer.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. I've met Mark Hamill once, right, and only talked about Star Wars to him, which he didn't like after about 2 minutes.
Yeah, I didn't. But there wasn't really much I could say because he's in a costume. It feels weird talking about his character, who's a robot. It just, that didn't make sense. So I have talked to him about it briefly, but not really.
Now you're in, you quickly in the picture, you get immersed in the world of the Jedi.
Yeah.
But the movie doesn't really start singing until you're in that cantina on Tatooine.
Han Solo, I'm Captain of the Millennium Falcon. Chewie here tells me you're looking for passage to the Alderaan system.
Yes, indeed. If it's a fast ship.
Fast ship? You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon?
Should I have?
It's a ship that made Kessel run
less
than
12 parsecs.
I've outrun Imperial starships, not the local bulk cruisers, mind you. I'm talking about the big Carillion ships now.
She's fast enough for you, old man.
She's fast enough for you, old man.
So that was obviously
what
Han Solo,
a scene.
Which Sheck
That's
loves.
It. You already know him.
Yeah. Which Sheck loves. He was cool.
What do you think
I
of
mean,
Chewbacca?
He, like, body language. If you're talking body language,
it was
no
so
one
weird.
Has better body language.
It was so weird seeing Harrison
Han
Ford as, like, the cool guy. Like, in obviously in this movie and then in Raiders.
You love the one when he's on the plane,
yeah,
Air Force
the
One.
He's
so not cool in
like,
that?
He's the president. You know, it's different than, like, being, like, the, you know, the cool guy, swag, you know.
He's not,
got,
not
got it right, though. He,
yeah.
I mean, he really has it.
Totally. It was, like, it was seeing him as a young guy. I was like, whoa, this is Harrison
He's not a cool guy, you understand. He's the all-time coolest.
Coolest, as Sheck says.
Well, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
What's
is he
about?
The coolest guy in movie history? Han Solo.
I got it.
Handsome Hank, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Yeah. By some measure.
James Bond is cool.
But James Bond's cool, but he still works for the government. He still works for the man in the end.
Yeah. Solo's doing his own thing.
Doing his own thing.
And ultimately, because he writes his own ticket, that's what makes the ending so powerful, isn't it? You think he's only in it for himself. He is in it for himself, but he also ultimately does the right thing, doesn't he, Black?
Well, he's very, like I said, him and Chewbacca are very like Rocket Raccoon and Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy.
I don't like that.
Solo and Rocket, you know, both guys quick to pull out their guns, all in it for the money. Only them can really understand who their partner is, being, you know, Groot slash, you know, Chewbacca. And it was very, like, the parallels are very obvious. Complete ripoff.
What did you think when Luke had his little entanglement with the guy at the bar? You'll be dead!
Yeah, I know. It's funny.
You should be careful with yourself.
That whole
We're wanted men!
That whole scene was like, obviously, you've seen commercials and other stuff, parodies of it. It was like, oh, I've pretty much seen this before it started. It was great to actually see.
Do you see the impact? I've said this to Handsome Hank ad nauseum and to people here at the NFL, and I mean it. Do you see Han Solo, the effect that he has, that he changes that movie and separates it from most other sci-fi movies or the high-concept kind of pictures because Whereas they ask you to invest in this, you know, pseudo religion and to care about the powers of being a Jedi versus when it goes dark, good and evil and all that debate. But you inject Solo into it, who is a cynic about all of it.
Right.
He is the voice of the viewer. This is what I always say about me. Bunch of players, if you have a bunch of players and coaches, well, then they're just talking about the Force. And we're Damashek, though, I break through the wall, you see. You're putting me in there to represent the fan. You see, handsome?
I agree, Dave. I've always agreed with you whenever you tell me this story.
That's right, because daily. That's a – and I'm cool like Solo.
Yeah, that bit I don't necessarily agree on.
But what'd you think, though, Black Tie, about when they get to the Death Star? Were you impressed by the power of the Death Star?
Death Star was cool. But
it blows up planets.
Yeah.
I know. There's a clue in the name.
Yeah. Does look cool, too.
Alderaan.
Speaking of Death
Star. Say goodbye to Alderaan.
It's pretty neat that they build a planet that basically, it's a space station, you understand.
Speaking of the Death Star, there is a commander on that
Thousands
ship.
Of voice cried out. We're silenced, you know. Kenobi, that one hits Kenobi real
hard,
but then Solo lets him know, I've been from one end of this galaxy to the other, and I've never seen anything to make me believe there's one all-powerful force.
Apparently not. But so there's a character on the Death Star that reminds me of Tywin Lannister for Game of Thrones. And
again,
if this movie was made today, I feel like Tywin Lannister, Charles Dance, would play that role. I was like, huh, that's exactly.
He's the
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Exactly.
You almost wonder if, like, you know, these, again, influences, right? Like, were you thinking of that character when you were thinking about Tywin Lannister?
No, it just happens that they resemble each other facially.
You know what's never really been explained in a satisfying way? Grand Moff Tarkin is an old man, and he wears the military getup and everything else. Why is Vader expected to take orders from this
character?
That
was a strange setup.
It's never explained even in the prequels. Why does Vader answer to anybody other than the Emperor, who you'll meet later, Black?
I was expecting that to be explained, but it did seem weird. I thought Vader was the man.
He's not the kingpin. There is one above Vader, and you'll learn that story later if you watch Empire.
I suspect what's happened is, obviously, Tarkin's been around longer because Vader has to go through a process.
Longer than what? Vader, the Emperor is there when Vader makes his turn.
True, but I think Tarkin,
that's all I get, Emperor, after all I've been through.
But he's
all
probably,
I've been through, you're asking me to take orders from this octogenarian creep.
But they can't lay him off. You know, he's got tenure. They can't hand him they can't fire him. They're waiting. He's probably a year and a half away from retirement, and they're gonna give him the golden watch and the corporate big big party to say goodbye to him. You can imagine that, you know, they'll bring in the band from the cantina.
You did good work destroying Alderaan. Now hit the bricks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's your gold watch.
That was where
surprise, we hit. Grand Moff, it's your retirement party. I did not know this was coming. It's going to be great. Retirement parties on the Death Star.
I love, though, the greatest with Vader is, aside from when we first see him, is when he chokes out the guy
at
the conference table. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
No, it was pretty cool. But in closing here, so there's a couple of quick things.
Like Kenobi?
It was cool.
Kenobi's
great. Who's your favorite character?
Now, that's a name I've not heard in a long, long time.
Before we get to that, Hank,
of course I know him. He's me.
This was very... Damn, Shake's on the roll here. Speaking of names, this is very like Game of Thrones. There's a lot of unique names, except these names are actually cooler. The Game of Thrones, like, it's hard to, like, understand or remember them. But these names...
Once, as you've heard a million times... That's an awesome name. Right. Ben Kenobi to his chums. By the way, I don't know. I don't know that if you're Obi-Wan Kenobi and you're smart and you control the supernatural to some degree and everything. He didn't put in a lot of work with his cover nickname, right?
Old Ben.
With his alias.
Old Ben Kenobi. No one. No.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Never heard of him. My name's Ben Kenobi. maybe we want to change both of those parts.
Maybe he was just hoping the Force would work there.
Although he did have a good costume, because if you buy the chronology, when you see what's his name from
Evan Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor. When you see him, we're supposed to buy that that it's been 18 years since we saw him.
did not age well.
Living in a cave will do that
exactly.
to you.
That's
Although he does have a nice little crib there set up. You know,
that's
that
pretty
little,
nice. He's got a TV. He does have a TV in there, which I've always found extraordinary.
Yeah, and he's What's got that lightsaber off? Laying around.
Right.
Yeah. That his father wanted him to have.
Pretty odd, though, was pretty
Luke's
awkward.
Father. It's nice that Luke's father, before he died, left a lightsaber for his for his child, right?
Yeah, kind of like the watch in, you know, Pulp Fiction.
I'd like to know more about that father.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to know more about Luke's father.
See, I already know that. That
What do you know?
I already know the I'm your father scene. I just...
That stinks. You know Vader's his father.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, even though he was telling the story, Vader killed your dad, it's like, well, that's not true. That's already
well, it kind of is.
Well, we'll see.
Well, well,
that's what old sly Ben would have Luke believe, but I'm always on Luke's side on that one.
You're playing
fast and loose, old man. You know, I don't necessarily appreciate the lies you told me.
So going back to your Pulp Fiction, you know, being surprised by the violence suddenly, were you a little shocked to see the smoldering corpses of his aunt and uncle lying outside?
Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. That's pretty upsetting.
Because that whole movie is one of those things where you're like, whoa, I've forgotten that it was
charred remains.
So graphic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could have stood out. I wasn't as shocked, but I do. It was kind of weird having that stand out. Another scene that was interesting.
Imperial soldiers. That would take them home. And he jumps in his little Land Cruiser. Yep. I had a Land Cruiser, the little toy, when I was a child. Did you have that?
Yeah, I had that.
Yeah,
pretty cool. Also made my own out of a, that's true as well, out of a those blow-up like rubber dinghy that you could get at the beach, but I knocked the bottom out of it, and then I would run around with the rest of it around me like a, kind of like a rubber ring, but larger. Hold it, and I would just cruise around.
And you could still fit through the car window when you would jump through wearing
it. No, I didn't. I never ever mix. You don't mix Dukes of Hazzard with Star Wars.
You must have been some treat running around the UK loving all things American. People must have just been baffled by you. Were all your peers in?
I
think must
at
have
that time,
Star Wars,
I mean, obviously
right?
Star Wars, Dukes of Hazzard, A-Team, they were all big, I think. Maybe just for me.
So, and what did you think of the...
Another interesting point was a scene where they're, like, in a little swamp area with, like, a creature underneath them, and Han Solo goes, I got a bad feeling about this. So I was going to deduct this movie a lot of points with that cliche, and I remembered it was made in 77. That probably was the first time that phrase was ever uttered in a movie, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's weird, the whole trash compactor storyline, that there's that creature living in that thing. It's, I guess it's supposed to be a rodent on the Death Star. Curious how it got there.
It's what happens, you know, you hear about all the time here. You know, someone buys themselves a pet crocodile or alligator or whatever, and then it gets too big, they flush it down, and then suddenly there's a 40-foot alligator living in the sewer. I would imagine one of the stormtroopers got a pet. Let's say it's an anaconda, and then he's like, I can't keep this in the Death Star. This is ridiculous. It's way too big for me to keep in my quarters here. Throws it down into the trash, and then next thing you know, you've got a gigantic, you know, flesh-hungry animal living in the trash compactor.
Interesting.
I'd say that's pretty obvious.
The trash compactor scene is the funniest in the movie when C-3PO, when he's trying to instruct R2-D2 to shut it down. Shut it down! Shut it all down! Oh, curse these, whatever he says, these rusted joints. I was too slow to save them. Listen to them, R2. They're all dying when they're celebrating that they've stopped it. That's my favorite.
Last few points here before we move on, because we got two more movies, is Super Awkward Kiss from Princess Leia to Luke.
I could see that relationship going further, though.
Apparently, there's more of a story to that, so I'm going to let that
relationship's going to go a lot further.
And then Princess Leia, she was cool throughout the movie, but the medal ceremony, though.
You liked her, though.
Anna LaFox type material. Lastly, good movie, no post-credit scene. I was disappointed about that.
Well, that's also applying modern day standards to a movie made in 1977.
That's how it goes.
Did you feel it was powerful though when Kenobi relinquished his life to save the others?
It was weird because before he does that, he like smiles and like I was
but the student. Now I am the master. Yeah. Only a master of evil, Darth. what a thing, huh? right? But the
you
most important
me
thing
down,
of all,
I shall become more powerful.
Than you can
possibly
imagine.
So I
mean,
know,
but that's
I picked
still
up on that. So I'm. I don't know. I don't know what that's about. But
well, the most important thing of all is the destruction of the Death Star. Negative, negative. It just impacted on the surface, and you know, Luke goes down there. He barrels through it. Luke, are you all right? Yes. He turns it off. Use the Force, Luke. And when he turns off that machine and he just goes with the Force, and he still wouldn't have made it, though. Let's keep in mind, the all-powerful Force that Solo is so cynical about wouldn't have won the day had it not been for Han Solo and his loyalty to show up, blow up that TIE fighter, cause Vader to go into his executive-level TIE fighter, which has the bent-in wings, and spin off into space, and then he blows the Death Star.
How often do you?
You're all clear, kid. What's that?
How often do you watch this? How many times have you seen this movie?
Well, I've not seen it in many, many years. I'm saving it for. I want my eyes to be as clean as possible. But the day is coming, and it's coming soon, where I sit down with Jean-Claude Van Damischek and his sister Oprah, and we will take this in as a family.
Awesome.
It's gonna be
That's an occasion I'm looking forward to.
I can't wait for it. So all right, how many black ties does the film get?
This gets 3.5.
3.5.
Yes. It was good. Again, it laid the groundwork. It made me intrigued to see what's coming next.
So will you go ahead and watch
a lot of,
more?
A lot of people say Empire Strikes Back is probably the best one, and that's like I want the payoff.
But it's maybe the best one. But once you've done that, you may as well watch.
Well, let's see. I take it a day at a time, you know. But after seeing this, it leaves me intrigued, and I do want to have it pay off because this was cool, and I liked the world it set up. It wasn't necessarily the most fun though in the moment.
Just well, Empire is the better picture, but as I always say, the same thing about Fellowship of the Rings versus Two Towers in Lord of the Rings. The first installments are impressive, and I like those ones just by a tick better, even though I acknowledge intellectually the second installments are probably a little bit better, because they're creating these potentially ridiculous universes.
Yep.
I mean, if you step back, and 10 minutes into the movie, and you're watching a gold robot walk through a desert, and you're already invested in it, when you remove yourself from that and just sort of look at it with clean eyes at how ridiculous that could have been and how laughable. We could have just laughed that movie off, as we have so many others, as just a ridiculous-looking thing, and instead you're emotionally invested very quickly. Same thing as Lord of the Rings. It deserves to be hailed for that reason.
No, I agree, and that's why it's a 3.5. Honestly, on a fun scale, probably been in a 3, but I know its importance. I know the groundwork in which it laid. So, good.
Glad
movie,
you've now heard of the Millennium Falcon. She's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 2 parsecs.
Next movie, or the next matchup, actually, was Raiders versus Godfather.
So, all right, so moving on to the finals, though, is Pulp Fiction.
That is all correct, right. Yes.
Fair enough.
All right, then now the next matchup.
I
Raiders
disagree, but I love both those movies too. All right,
no, definitely Pulp Fiction. Raiders of the Lost Ark versus The Godfather. Let's do Raiders first because this is going to be quick.
I don't like the sound of that. I do like the sound of this though. Dun 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 dun. He has a whip and a hat
and a gun. Yeah. Funny thing though, I actually do like the theme song. But every other piece of music in this movie, I cannot stand. It took me out of the movie. I couldn't deal with it. And I don't know if it's a fact of the matter that I watch it, obviously, years after the fact. I don't think that's the case, though. Movies like this still come out with this sort of theme and music and vibe, and I just cannot get into it based on that alone. It's very, like I said last week, and you guys called me out on it, it is very hokey. I felt like it was very campy. However, I will give the movie...
What about the first 10 minutes?
It looked really good. Well, the first 10... Oh, let's talk about the first 10 minutes. Well...
Right out of the gate,
is a bunch of foreshadowing, right? You see the whole snakes thing. Oh, I don't like snakes. Oh, you know, that's going to come up later on. He's going to have to deal with snakes at some point. It's going to be a big deal. The whole the guy who shows up and is like, oh, look at this. I have, you know, once something that was once yours is now mine. It's like, oh, this guy's going to show up again.
Yeah, that's telling a story.
No, agreed. And then, you know, he goes into class. I did not know he was.
Wait a second. But the whole thing with getting the idol, toss me the idol, I'll throw you the whip. There isn't time to argue, all that stuff. Whip, by the way, did you recognize Molina there? What's his name, Vincent Molina? I can't think of his the English actor, Vincent, the guy who says throw me the whip. There isn't time to argue. He's been in a million movies since then.
Oh, well, maybe, but still,
Anthony.
I can't think of his name. Molina, right? I know you know him if you see him.
Yeah.
You may not even it may not register because he's young and thin in that one.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But yeah, I mean, again, I'm not going to discredit.
Molina.
I'm not going to discredit the cinematography and how good the movie looked and how well it was set up. It just wasn't for me. This was the one movie where I felt like this movie just wasn't for me. And it's not necessarily the fact that it's dated. It's like if a movie came like that today, I would not watch it. Like just based on the premise. I realized something. I'm really big on American government under siege type movies. Just that backdrop alone is fun. It's always fun. I'm not so big on treasure hunt type movies. It's like, eh.
But this involved the U.S. government directly. This is putting it in WW2 as he vies for the Ark against the Nazi scourge.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what's great about the picture.
I totally hear it, and I see why people like it. It just wasn't for me. Another thing that I thought was weird was Indiana, man. That's a weird name. That's a weird first name. Again, I got a lot of tweets like, well, that's going to be explained. It's like, geez.
There's a backstory to it. But by itself, even without that backstory, I think it's a terrific name.
Indiana Jones.
Not only a terrific name, I know I've got a close friend who named his firstborn Indiana.
You're kidding me.
Jones
wow.
Is great. Indiana is only, just because when I realized when the teacher calls him or the principal calls him Indiana, I'm like, whoa, that's actually his name. Indiana Jones, when you say it all together, makes sense.
What about, Indiana. I mean, I would contend I'd be much better off as Pennsylvania Damashek. No?
No.
What do you have, provinces or whatever?
Counties.
County? What county are you from in the UK?
I was born in London.
Oh, London County?
Greater London, I'm not sure that was.
London Hodgson is pretty cool sounding,
London
I think.
Fletcher came in here, we asked him about London, he knew nothing about London. Do you remember that?
Oh,
A couple years ago?
That
was embarrassing.
That was a low point.
Nothing about London at all.
Not unlike this, Black Tie not liking Raiders of the
Lost Ark. Well, I know, check again, I know this is like probably your most fun favorite movie, it's clear, but
this wasn't
for me. And
it's one of my top 10 favorite movies,
probably. The good things about this movie, for instance, the role of Marion, she seems pretty cool. And, again, if this movie was made today, I think Emily Blunt would be in that role. Like, it just feels
that's a good call. Do you know that, I don't know if you know this, Handsome, the character of Marion is supposed to be, played by Karen Allen, is supposed to be, there are now infamous manuscripts, and there might even be audio of this, of Lucas Spielberg and the producer, and I can't think of remember who the producer is, but he's a high-profile name. The three of them sitting in a room having discussions, beating out the story and the backstory and everything else. Marion is supposed to be in that scene when she's in the bar in Tibet, is supposed to be, I believe, 21 years old or 22 maybe, which means, and she references, I knew you'd come back through this door one day, Indiana Jones, and that's 10 years into the future. He supposedly, Indiana Jones, the way George Lucas really wanted it to be was that she was a 12 or 13-year-old girl who he had an untoward relationship
with.
Goodness. And Spielberg tries to talk. If you read the manuscript, it's all. I don't really think that's a good direction to go here, George. And he really is resolute about the need for this to be the case. It's weird, and obviously they win out. Or they don't. In fact, if you watch that, knowing it, they don't do anything that undermines
that could be true.
Right. But they don't acknowledge it either.
But they also don't acknowledge she's 21.
No, right. I'm saying, but they don't really get away. That's probably the concession they make to him is that, well, if Karen Allen reads as 22, then good. Then George Lucas has his way, which is weird. But those are some of my favorite scenes. When Dr. Jones comes to the bar and she slugs him, then he leaves, and then the Nazi scourge comes in.
I know. You're really excited about that one.
I love that.
Good evening, Fräulein.
The bar is closed.
We are not thirsty.
Couple of things about that. That theme, that music is just, oh my gosh, so campy. But it's funny.
It's dramatic.
The guy, the doctor, I forget his name, he reminds me so much of Adam Zola from the Captain America movie, which again is also set with like a Nazi backdrop. And I kept hoping Captain America would show up. He didn't, though. Disappointed.
He had better. He had Dr. Joe.
Disappointed. But overall, again,
if Erland, we meet again.
We got a lot to go, so I'm going to give this a rating here. Again, it wasn't for me, but I understand that it looks good. I understand why people liked it. But overall, I'm going to give it a 2.5. Dies.
All right. Two questions real quick.
Yep.
One, what did you think of probably the most famous moment in Indiana Jones history is when he shoots the guy,
yep,
waves the sword around. Did yep. that strike you, or had you seen that?
Oh, I've heard about it. I heard about, you know, the story there and how he was actually on set and needed to go. So he's essentially, can I just shoot this guy rather than just, you know, have this whole plan choreographed scene? So
Harrison Ford, that's not the only great idea he had for one of his iconic characters. I don't want to spoil anything, but I'll tell you something. After you watch Empire, there's a moment that he improvises in Empire Strikes Back. He improvises a piece of dialogue that is great, that
awesome.
Defines who he is. That's
awesome.
All I'll tell you about that. What did you think of the faces melting off?
It was cool.
I thought you would love it. I thought you like supernatural stuff. I thought you would get into the whole art business.
That's a misconception there. I don't like supernatural stuff. Like, there's a big difference.
You like superheroes. You like the Avengers. You like Thor.
Stuff. Everything up until this point, and this would change in Avengers too, but everything up until this point in Avengers is explained by science, not supernatural.
You know what? I have a feeling. I don't think Black Tie watched the end of this movie.
Oh, I did. I just wasn't into it.
I have a feeling you didn't watch the
I
end
did.
Of the
I just
movie.
Wasn't
Did
into
you,
it.
Black Tie? No,
I did.
Jive.
I watched it all the way through the end. I just
What happened
it.
At the end?
Where's the arc? Where's the arc?
Oh, the American governor, so they keep it, and he, you know, Indiana's ticked off about that.
Yep,
and,
they put it in the big
they
crate.
Put
them
in
they
a crate with a bunch of other ones. I watched it, but I wasn't like plugged in because I was like, oh, this movie's lost me already. So there's that. All right, so last movie,
the Snake Pit. Oh, so many good.
So far, by the way, my bracket is intact, 1 through 4.
Wow.
This is going to be exciting for me.
So I lose, obviously, because I said you would like Raiders. Not Star Wars.
Again, I'm not disrespecting it. Again, I can watch a movie. There's a big difference between liking a movie and thinking a movie is good. I did not like this movie. I can see why it's good, though.
Who would you, out of the main characters we've discussed so far, Darth Vader, Indiana Jones, and Vincent Vega, whose wardrobe would you most want? I'd like to see you dress like Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones.
No, probably. I could see Black Tie pulling off a Darth Vader every day. Just showing up like that, dressed like that every day.
Sometimes he does.
Younger,
it'd
maybe.
Funny,
some weird
it'd be funny to
I
see
do like
walk
black,
down,
though.
Walk down the thing. And
I am big on black, so.
Yeah.
No, it was fun. All right, last movie. This is beautiful right here, guys. By far, the most beautiful score I heard all weekend.
That's a good
I love
start
that you've
him.
Started every movie by talking about the score.
Well, that's a huge
really
part. I mean,
it obviously for you, it's never been that big for me.
It's a huge part. It's such a
I
huge
mean, I like,
part.
I appreciate a good one, but it's not a killer for me if it's not.
Oh, I love it. So The Godfather. This is I watched this on Sunday early before Indiana Jones, and one thing that first stood out to me, I guess his name is Mark Puzo or...
Mario Puzo,
there you go, the writer. So the movie starts off with the title screen with Mario Puzo's Godfather. Obviously, he wrote the book, so that's fine. But I've always had the discussion and wonder, like, when directors attach their names to the movies, like Lee Daniels, the butler, that is not a cool move.
Well, it's ironic, too, because I've never read Puzo's Godfather, but from most people who have, they say that this is one of the few occasions where the movie is by far superior to the book. The book is supposed to be pedestrian.
Yep.
Although, how can I say?
Obviously, the movie starts off with that shot of, Don Corleone, but the shot of the other guy talking to Don Corleone about his problems and about his daughter, and that's another scene I've heard
about. How about that the first scene is, the wedding scene is a half an hour long? A movie that starts in one spot and stays there for a half an hour.
It is, this whole movie is deliberate. It's slow, but I loved it. You know, I loved like the scene from scene to scene. This guy's just talking, and it really stood out to me that maybe I might be a big, because we had Michael Robinson here a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how he's a big mob movie guy. I think I might be in that camp too, because one of my other favorite movies.
It's interesting that you are, but you'd never seen this one.
Well, again,
like the ultimate mob movie.
I have my faults.
I I bypassed that
one. I have my faults. I do not compare. I'm not comparing this movie to The Godfather, but one thing that really stands out to me about American Gangster is that I can always tune into that because it has such great performances from Denzel to Josh Brolin to Russell Crowe and all those guys. And that was the case here.
That's like a great movie.
Yeah, it's really, like, I can watch it at any point, you know, because it's just captivating.
That's what I've said about The Godfather is the thing that makes it, intellectually at least, the best movie of all time is because you could, without knowing the context of what's happening at any moment, if you turn on any scene, just about literally any scene in the movie, it's captivating stuff.
Totally. I mean, obviously, with Brando there, I mean, his performance was
Brando is awesome in it. Pacino's great. James Caan, dynamite. But to me, Duvall is
whoa,
the draw that stirs.
It was weird seeing Robert Duvall as not the old guy. That was completely odd. It was like, wait, that's Robert Duvall? It like, took me a couple of scenes to figure it out. It's like, wait, that.
Watch. I'll tell you what. Watch him. Watch Duvall. I don't know about acting, so it's pretentious for me to say, but to me, Duvall is probably the best American actor because, consider, watch, all you have to do is dig up a movie, I think from 82, 83, he plays this this burnt-out old Western singer in Tender Mercies, and then put that next to, within about a span of, 11 or 12 years, that he plays Tom Hagen, this quieter, cuts that clean. He's the one that is not, he's not Goomba. He's on the outside, but he's in the family, and he's so reserved. The scene with Duvall and Brando after they shoot Sonny on the causeway. By the way, did you see that coming? That was the greatest, right?
I did not see that coming at all.
The stunner of Sonny not just getting killed, but killed in that fashion.
Yeah. First of all, I was like, what's up with your bullets, guys? Why does it take like 20 to kill someone? Like, crying out loud, you're able to kill Don Corleone with 5, and then it took you like 25 to kill his son. It's like, what's up with your bullets, guys? That was surprising.
That's the line of the show.
What's up with your bullets?
Black Ties review, Final Four review. What's up with your bullets, guys?
Yes. Come on.
Same thing with Pulp Fiction. They couldn't shoot.
I know. Divine Intervention.
But the scene after they shoot Sonny in, and it's dark downstairs, and he's like, the women and children are crying upstairs. Why don't you tell your godfather what everybody seems to know but me? I was just on my way up. Hagen says he's destroyed. His brother, essentially, has been murdered, but now he has the worst part of now delivering this news. I was on my way upstairs, but first you needed a drink. Well, now you've had your drink. And shot Sonny on the causeway, and Brando is destroyed for all of 4 to 6 seconds. He weeps, his body shakes, he heaves, but in silence, and then he raises his finger, I want no response, or whatever he says, and he just goes right back into Godfather role. And lays out what's going to be now as a result. It's just the best. Movie of great scenes, that's the best scene.
Well, I don't know about that. We'll talk about it. But it is fascinating, like, just to see. And that's why I think mob movies are fascinating in general. It's like these people that live in such a world where, like, they have to deal with these sort of rules. And they wake up one day.
You adhere to the code no matter what.
Yeah, it's so insane. But another great scene from Brando was,
I don't know what to do.
Yes.
You can act like a man. What's the matter with you?
Apparently, that slapper's improvised. He just did it because he wasn't like in the performance of the other actor. And he was like, "Oh, maybe I'll slap him." And he'll.
Oh God! You can act like a man. That was the best.
That's a drop to keep for the show. That's one. That's one to keep around. There may be some you won't need again, but that's one you won't need
awesome.
To keep for the DDF.
Even if you have to use it on yourself, Black.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
I would like or on this whole around the NFL podcast.
But no, a couple other great scenes from him. Again, when Sonny died and he's looking at his body, and all he's doing is just moving his eyebrows up and forth. Like, he's not, like, he's looking like he wants to cry, but he's not because he's a godfather, but he's
seeing
his eyebrows.
I don't want his mother to see him like this. I want you to use all your powers.
That was very, like, Game of Thrones-ish. Like, he's talking to Grandmeister, and he wants them to, like, work some special potion for him. It was great. And then, obviously, his speech about being superstitious with the other guys, the other families involved, that was just amazing. It was like, this dude, and that's why I tweeted out, man, this guy is one smooth-talking brother, because, man, he's smooth. He's great.
I don't remember, yeah, but the first time he sits down with the Branzini, what's his name, and Sonny speaks up, He's like, you never speak out against the family. Would that is
don't ever tell anyone
what you're thinking. Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
And the most in terms of action, the intensity of the from the time they pick Michael up in the car and drive to the restaurant, yep. And he kills the sergeant and the mob guy. That's just the best when he gets the gun out of the bag. Yeah, I've been to that place. Good
it's
food.
So slow
good
and food. Deliberate.
Quiet. Yeah, people mind their business. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And then obviously going to Al Pacino,
Tessio.
It's it's so interesting to see like a character like completely change, but it's like it makes sense. Like, cause he completely changed. I didn't see that coming. Like, I didn't know. Honestly, I started watching the movie. I did not know where Al Pacino was. And it's like, you see a guy who went to the army, and then that change happens, that very first scene where he's talking about the plan, and the camera just zooms in on him in the chair, and I'm like, whoa, is he about to become the Godfather? That was the first time for me. I was like, oh.
What are you going
to
do, nice little boy? You're going to go up and shoot him, Sonny. Sonny Corleone.
It was just before that, and he's talking about the plan, and the camera starts zooming in on him. I was like, whoa, this guy's about to be the next badass. And then, obviously, I thought about Batman Begins Parallels, you know. Dad gets gunned down by the mob. Young son wants to take matters into his own hands. Actually,
interesting comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. And you know, what did you think? You said over the weekend you mentioned something about his Italian wife.
I also saw before I watched these four movies over the weekend. I saw Fast and Furious 7, and there's an actress in there who's actually in Game of Thrones. She's Daenerys's right hand woman.
Yes. Handmaiden.
Yes. So she's in Fast and Furious 7, and boy, she might be number one in my power ranking. So she's not, you know, that set the bar for the weekend. But Michael's wife in Sicily, up there too.
She's dynamite. Monday, Tuesday, okay. Thursday. Yeah, she gets blown up.
I know.
Very sad.
Another random thing, Clark Gable was their pop culture reference in this movie. When they were talking, like, hey, we want to go to America. Really? I'm Clark Gable. That was like their, you know.
Well, as we started out with somebody, as the tweet we read there, in Godfather 2, we get to see some of the backstory of the Corleone family, how it came to be, Black Tie. You will enjoy that one with Robert De Niro as young Vito.
All right. So, I mean, so that's that with the Godfather. So, Ties, I'm going to give this a...
Well, don't give that rating yet, because so you're clearly putting The Godfather
wins.
Over Star Wars. I can glean that
is
right?
Over Raiders of the Lost Ark. No
I
contest.
Mean, over Raiders. So that pits Pulp Fiction versus The Godfather for the greatest movie of all time that Black Tie has now seen. The winner is...
All right. Well, before that,
why don't you play the music? I'll be excited.
For Raiders, I honestly, knowing what I've known now, I much rather would have watched like Godfather 2 or Empire Strikes Back or Shawshank Redemption. Like, it was like, man, I feel like I didn't. I feel like
you needed
hey,
to
the
see
people
it.
Spoke. The people spoke.
Yeah, they did. I was like, man, I wish I'd spent time doing something else.
Well, here's the thing. Then, well, we can get to it afterwards. But then, if the maybe three out of the four gained your trust. Maybe it's time to go look at the other 12 and pick a handful of them to watch as well, because it seems like they're not as bad as you originally thought.
Sort of
well,
like the NIT, you know?
I never thought any was bad. It's just I had time to get to it. But in the finals, Pulp Fiction against The Godfather, overall, I got to go with Godfather. I mean, it was scene after scene was great. They had the better... facial, because the Bruce Willis scene where he's just his face while Ving Rhames was talking versus Brando's scene where just his face or the other guy's face. It's just The Godfather overall was better. It was more enjoyable. It's definitely the one I want to follow up on sequel wise. I know Pulp doesn't have the sequel, but I definitely want to. I might watch Godfather 2 tonight, to be honest.
All right.
I mean, the
so
score,
how many
man.
Black ties does it get? It gets straight up five black ties.
It gets 4.5. And
wow.
I'll say 4.5. It's a five
the
overall.
The score is not quite. The
no,
score.
The score is great. But
body
if
language
I,
issues? What
if I
it?
Give it a five, that means I'm saying.
Well, play the music one. While you talk about it here to round things out.
And maybe after I see Godfather 2, it might be overall. Then I go back and see one, it might be a five. But for now, it's a 4.5. Because if I'm saying it's a five, that means I'm saying it's the best movie I've ever seen.
Tell me three movies to wrap this up that do get five black ties.
Well, that's the thing. One movie that definitely gets a five black tie is The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight, to me, 5 out of 5. It's spectacular. acting.
It's got major. Directing. It's got major story holes.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's that. But the idea, because obviously The Godfather is dealing with a realistic setting. Like, it would be much more jarring if they had a start, you know.
I agree that if Batman showed up in The Godfather, it would be weird.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like you're playing in a different field. And I am not one of those people that, obviously, I'm not one of those people to just be like, oh, this is just like superhero stuff, so you can't take it as seriously. No, it is. It does make it harder, actually. It makes it harder to put together a coherent, good movie like what
my
Nolan
point
did.
About Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. It's ridiculous. It's it's you costuming hundreds of extras to run around and you're invested in it rather than laughing at it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's no slight to Godfather. I might see two, go back and see one, and be like, wow, this maybe is the greatest. But overall, for right now, I still think The Dark Knight is the best movie I've ever seen.
Well, Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes, and so too does this bracket. I found it captivating throughout. To follow along through Young Black Tie's eyes, Handsome Hank, your final thoughts?
It's been thrilling. I look forward. I think Black Tie will watch Godfather 2, it sounds like. I'd like him to watch Empire Strikes Back
and
invest himself in that canon. And also, you know, to give a chance to Saving Private Ryan, to Top Gun, to some of these other movies that were in the bracket originally, which, you know, maybe you'll become more of a cinephile, more of an appreciator of the fine art.
So, there are so many. I mean, I don't want to get into it right now, but just quickly, have you seen the Newman Redford movies? Have you seen The Sting and Butch Cassidy and The Sundance Kid?
I have not, no.
Those are great
What
movies.
I think is fascinating, though, is that Black Tie,
Roadhouse,
all the movies, every single movie of the 16 that were on that original thing, just like you came across things like, oh, I recognize an ad that was done like this, and now I understand that they're actually making a parody of this. Probably every single movie that was on that original list, because there's some big movies on there, every one you'll be like, oh, that's why that guy once said to me, be my wingman.
No,
It's so true. Once you start seeing,
there's
going
to be so many things
Simpsons
in your life.
Simpsons episodes will now make greater sense to you in character.
Well, Simpsons I just don't watch because I prefer Family Guy. That's all. I know you're a Simpsons guy. Yes. But, I mean, yeah, I do totally agree. I mean, you get the better picture, full context of those references, which a lot of them I actually do know. And, like, the cantina scene, I knew where that was from. I just didn't see how that came to life. Or Say What Again, knowing that the guy actually did Say What Again.
Yeah.
It was definitely a fun time, fun weekend. Sheck was loving it. Hank, I know you two plugged in. Definitely thanks to everyone that voted and kept up with all the silliness. There's some people I know I'd probably ticked off on Twitter, but, you know, it's all fun and games, but it was a fun time for sure.
Well, great fun. Yes.
And this isn't the end of our conversations around pop culture, because Game of Thrones starts this weekend.
All right.
So later this week, I think we need to catch ourselves up on
Winter is coming.
Done and done.
About what we think is going to happen?
I'm not a fan of doing that. That's what ruined True Detective for.
No.
I never play the game of what's going to happen in a TV show.
Just some ideas about what might happen in this season of Game of Thrones.
I'm down to do that. We talked to Larry Fitzgerald about that, and he gave his thoughts on who was going to win the throne ultimately. He had a surprising answer, actually. Maybe let's dig that up so we can play it back for anyone who missed it, and we'll include that in our next episode. Yeah, Game of Thrones is coming up. Mad Men is back. Let's talk about some of that. And, oh, by the way, the NFL draft is coming up at the end of the month in Chicago, and we're looking forward to heading off there. So we'll get returned to Kibitzin. Some about that, but some things, you know, just have to take priority today, and paying off Black Tie's movie list was that. So thanks for bearing with us, and thanks for all the tweets. People really enjoyed this this little venture. It was all Black Tie's idea.
Thanks to everyone. I mean, it was Hank's idea to live tweet it, so that was fun. I probably would have at some point, but, you know, that really was a fun time.
And if we need to celebrate any more, I see here that the Eagles have signed one of the three or four best names in the NFL, Say Ye Ajirid Tutu. He's back in the
news.
NFL.
Say Ye Ajirid Tutu, Ajirid Tutu,
Say Ye Ajirid Tutu, Say Ye Ajirid Tutu. All right.
Nigerian name, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, Nigeria Jones, we will let you go. And we'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football and movie fans. This is how Star Wars ends, Black Tie, this song here. It's been a thin slice of heaven.